The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1010. It's the 6th of March, 2018. On the podcast today, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources, that's XTR, discusses the new contract terms with Moz Gold for the exploitation of the alluvial gold deposits at its Manica mining concession in Mozambique. Also on the podcast, Keith Alorn, CEO of Powerhouse Energy, PHE, and Keith provides us with an update on the progress of its distributed modular gasification unit at the University of Chester's Thornton Science Park. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about the following companies: Active Energy, AEG, i3 Energy, i3E, and Urals Energy, UEN. A lot of energy there from Alan. Also on the podcast, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources. That's XTR. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, you got a bit of news out, and we'll get to the news in a bit. Before we do, as always, Colin, for people not aware of what Extract Resources is all about, could you summarise, please?
Well, Extract is a focused gold company. It's focused in the Manica region of Mozambique at the moment, and it's actually in production. It's producing cash flow from alluvial gold operations, but it has also some hard rock operations, a key one being Fairbride, which has been the subject of a full DFS, and the company is looking at financing routes and operational routes to bring that into production. So in summary, we're a focused gold play in the Manica province in Mozambique.
Excellent stuff. Well, let's go through the news today. It's a new contract with Moz Gold. It's a different method of payment. Can you explain this and why so?
Well, why so? That cash flow is all important, and the route we had before was tons delivered to the processing plant. And it's a very, very difficult thing to monitor. And so we talked to the company, and we've elected to go the gold route, which is same as our Sino Minerals route. We get a share in the gold, and of course we get it faster. We may get two gold distributions a week, and we can get that gold refined or sold to the Mozambique system faster. So it aids cash flow. And from monitoring point of view, you know, we have keys to the gold room, keys to the sluice box, loose boxes, keys to the nugget box. So it really does assist all of our control features. And I guess in that agreement there, we talk about penalties. There's penalties been built up because they didn't quite make the tonnages, and that was a tough target to make the tonnages. But they've agreed to the penalties, and we're very pleased with that. And you will also note in the agreement that we've lent them money, and so we are considering converting that money loan into equity, into a 25% equity. So it's a restructuring of the same contract. They've got the same ground, but we're having a gold split. And we've rearranged a debt that they have to us to be paid over a period of time. So, and with the option ourselves of taking an interest in that alluvial project. I think we spoke before, you and I, Justin, about alluvials, and the whole idea of Extract was to job it out. But we feel the potential is so big. We talked to our shareholders about actually lending some money, which we might turn into a stake. What is important from this announcement, and I don't know if it's been picked up, is that we've actually financed that loan out of operations. So we haven't had to go to parent company. We've actually financed the loan completely out of operations. And we've still got a couple hundred thousand dollars on deposit down there, including our including gold on hand. So in terms of cash flow, it's been a pretty good venture. We've been set back with the rains. Moz Gold in particular have been set back by their own rains, and and Sino Minerals haven't. But in a nutshell, we're putting the agreement more or less to coincide with the same agreement that Sino Minerals have got.
Okay. And so, I mean, does this change, or what are the prospects for the levels now?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that. There are, you know, as we sit there at this moment, we've got the prospects of 6 machines, where when we started this whole thing off, we had the prospect of about 3 or 4. 6, in actual fact, could be 8. The Chinese 4, the Mosgold have acquired another processing plant, and of course with Omnia, which come into production towards the end of the month, they're bringing a plant across onto the concession, and when the extreme end of the concession, the ground will go to their existing plant. So that's the potential of 8, I think in reality 6. 3 separate contractors. The rain's stopped. So in actual fact, the prospects for the alluvials are extremely good. And you'll see in the announcement, we've got something like 98,000 tons of stuff parked on surface. Musgold's kicked off to a fairly slow start. Sino Minerals were actually at the ground running. I think we had one single day where we did 3 kilograms. So they hit the track running. Omnia had a slower start. It's really interesting, you know, that Sino, they actually take the mountain to Moses, so as to speak. They actually put their plant down into the river and therefore negate the need to truck. On the other hand, the South Africans have got the very traditional model of kind of an open cut, and they got challenged by the rains much, much more than did the Chinese. But in summary, the Sino Minerals, but in summary, the rains are diminishing. I wouldn't say they've stopped, but they're certainly diminishing. They've got 97,000 tons of ground, of good ground on, waiting to be processed. They're down in the river there. We actually did lots of sampling before we actually did the overburden stripping. So Sino continue to rattle out the gold. Musgold are going to start bringing out the gold, and we want to be part of it. We're keeping our cards. We still have not decided whether or not we're going to exercise our option. Let's see how they go. But I'm very bullish on Omnia. They've been a bit slow. It's cost them penalties, and those penalties have agreed to pay us in the course of money and stage payment in the course of the year in stage payments. As I say, Sino Minerals are going fast, and we're looking forward to Optima coming on stream. And what I haven't said, of course, is that we've doubled the amount of yellow equipment on the property.
Yeah.
So all in all, if you talk about processing equipment, earth moving equipment, we're very well poised to take advantage of dry weather and those high grade gold situations, which occur from time to time. But you know, you can't guarantee you're going to get them all the time. But when you've got six processing plants working, and you're working over 3 or 4 kilometres separation, your chances of the more machines you've got, the chance of being in good ground increase. So we're looking forward to good production. And, of course, the weather's going to help that as well.
Marvellous. Colin, someone listening right now and like the progress you're making there, but are not yet following the story, but like the sound of this, give them 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, we're in gold, and that's always important. We're focused in gold. We're consolidating an area. We're currently into production and producing cash. That cash flow will grow very quickly, and we're about to bring a 7-year hard rock operation into production. That's 3 good reasons.
Yeah, excellent stuff. More than 3 there. Colin, thanks for chatting, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Keith Alone, Chief Executive Officer of Powerhouse Energy. That's PHE, ticker. Keith, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. It's always a pleasure to be here on Vox. I just have to do a quick shout out to Vox simply because it is such a tremendous opportunity for me to be able to speak directly to our investors, directly to people who are interested in making a difference in the hydrogen economy and people who are interested in the challenge that the growing problem of waste is creating in our world. So thanks for having me on your show.
Hey, no problem. And, you've got a cutting-edge technology here we're talking about. So if people are not aware, Keith, just summarise in a sentence or two, if you can, what is PHE all about?
Sure. Powerhouse Energy Group is really the UK pioneer in the waste-to-hydrogen market. We began initially as a traditional waste-to-energy company that was focused on generating a very clean synthesis gas through ultra-high temperature gasification. What we've discovered along the way is that by virtue of that ultra-high temperature gasification process in which we engage, we're able to extract a stream of road-quality hydrogen from our synthesis gas and deliver that as either a chemical feedstock or as a road fuel with zero emissions. So the opportunities that we have created, or the opportunity that the PHE technology and the distributed modular gasification system has created, is truly novel in both the waste management industry, and certainly we believe the first player in the world to be able to extract the hydrogen fraction from waste streams such as used non-recyclable plastics and end-of-life tires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big claim. And like I said, it's really cutting edge because you are, the only sort of, as far as you know, aware, the only company in the world that can do this. And like I said, you are the cutting edge. You're still sort of tweaking and testing this, but you did an operational update recently. Take us through what you've achieved here, Keith, in this update.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I want to just challenge the tweaking and testing. We're going to be continuing to tweak and test as any technology would do over the next number of decades. Because as new materials become available, as new efficiencies are achieved, we're continually improving, constant and never-ending improvement in our delivery of, as you say, leading-edge solutions for this problem. So the operational update was that we were we began the operation of our electrical generator at the Thornton Science Park running on the synthesis gas that we were generating. And this is something that we've said we were going to be doing for since the unit has come to the UK. In the time that we've been here in the UK, we've completely rebuilt the G3 DMG system. We've completely redesigned some components of it. We've integrated the entirely new control systems. And recently, once we felt like we had acquired as much data as was necessary for our to really move forward aggressively with our commercial design process, we began experimenting with how we wanted to tune the gas to most efficiently run the gas gen set. So we're now in a position to actually demonstrate the production of electricity from synthesis gas, high quality synthesis gas, and electricity is really the first step of any DMG system. Any distributed modular gasification system will always incorporate electrical generation because we generate an excess of electricity to both power our internal systems as well as to have a net export of over 1 megawatt per 25 ton per day module. So that's enough electricity that can be generated to power to power several thousand homes. Mm-hmm. Now, the electrical generation at Thornton this past week was not enough to power several thousand homes. It was enough to feed into Thornton's microgrid, and that's a process that we've begun now, is that we've begun working with Thornton to facilitate the connection between our electrical generation and the energy center, the Thornton's energy center microgrid, and we really look forward to being able to announce the fact that the electricity that we're generating is going to productive use in operating helping operate the Thornton Science Park.
Yeah, and your feedstock you're using was plastic, and I just, you know, literally a couple of seconds before we talked, saw a video on Twitter where a guy, a diver in Bali, was swimming in a sea of plastic, pretty much. That's encouraging that you're using plastic there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we've made it very clear that our intention is to target plastic as our first feedstock. And one of the things that we're recognizing is that this is becoming a dire challenge in the UK in particular, because the UK had been historically exporting much of its recyclable plastic and non-recyclable plastic to China. And China this year has refused to accept any further UK plastics and some other waste streams. And that has set a number of organizations, a number of companies back on their heels, because they're used to just shipping this stuff off to making it someone else's problem. And by the way, getting paid by the UK government to do so. And so now that China has refused acceptance, there are some small amounts that are being sent to Turkey, some small amounts that are being sent to Vietnam and Malaysia. And effectively, we're trying to take this plastic that is a tremendous resource. While it is a scourge to the earth, it is nonetheless a tremendous resource from which hydrogen can be extracted effectively, and from which we can then deliver clean energy and make a carbon negative impact on the state of the greenhouse gas load of this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so the next step is, like you say in the RNS last week, power the Thornton Science Park through a microgrid. And then after that, what's next? The next big sort of milestone after that, Keith?
I would say that we're going to be looking at the announcement of initial orders of equipment. We're going to be looking at things of the nature of beginning site works. Once permitting and planning has been completed, we're, as I mentioned last time we talked, we're in the second phase of the planning and permitting process and responding to queries by the permitting and planning people. And so we're moving forward very aggressively. We've been engaged in very active engineering reviews, and the commercial design process is going exceptionally well and is nearing completion. And I would say that we're looking at some very exciting times within the next few months.
Marvelous stuff. Well, Keith, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of what you're doing there, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Absolutely, Justin. So I think that what one needs to look at as an investor is, what are the market drivers? Well, the market drivers are really the fact that that major companies are beginning to make billion-pound investments in the hydrogen economy, billion-pound investments in creating an infrastructure in which hydrogen can be the principal source of energy. We play into that driver exceptionally well, because we're one of the few mechanisms by which one can create distributed hydrogen, not have to pay the exorbitant cost of distributing hydrogen, but we can create hydrogen where it's needed, when it's needed. We're also a company that, by virtue of making electricity from our distributed modular gasification, our DMG systems, from day one, we're profitable from day one. So if you're looking at at how one defines the success of a company, I think that having a tremendously profitable mechanism from day one is an important component. And last but not least, there has got to be a shift in the way that we manage our waste streams, in not just in the UK but in the world as a whole. As you had mentioned, the burden that the planet is beginning to actively see for the amount, the plastics that are washing into the ocean, over 8 million tons of plastic wash into the ocean each year, and that 8 million tons of plastic could potentially be powering 1,000 DMG systems, generating clean hydrogen, which generates zero emissions upon combustion. So making a significant carbon negative contribution to the world in a way that is economically efficient, that is ecologically robust, and that truly is going to leave a legacy.
Excellent stuff, Keith. Good to chat to you again, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You all right, Al?
I'm very good, Jess. Yes, warmed up considerably. You know, the way things are going, we'll be having a barbecue this weekend.
Yeah, and that'll be the summer. Done.
That's it. Yeah. Back to snow next week.
I was thinking, though, I think we've gone through the winter pretty much now, haven't we? All we need is a bit of, you know, sort of wet, get the wet weather at the way, and hopefully you get a bit of spring coming along. So that's nice, because I've often thought one of my ideals, I don't know if I'll ever do it, is I'd like to have a place just, you know, somewhere, maybe Tenerife, not too far, where I can just spend the 3 months a year that's miserable in this country, and then come back when the spring, when someone says, oh, I'll just keep an eye on the weather, and then I'll just fly back, you know, I'll just do that for a nice day. So the weather does affect mood, and I think endless days of wetness or grey, you know, really puts you in a bit of a downer. I just think nice blue sky, the colours are lit up, everything's more vivid, and just, I would like that. And just, of course, ideally, just buying and selling shares, you know, and just doing that.
Well, that's it. Some years ago, I got involved in racing motorcycles, and I've always been into bikes in one way, shape, or form. But an old buddy of mine who I race with, he took his bikes down to Almeria on the east coast of Spain, and it was nice and hot down there. And he spent January and most of February just riding the bike at Almeria racetrack, sipping beer in the sunshine, and a bit of tapas, and that was that. So I had a very good internet connection, so there's a very strong case for going down there, you know, especially when the weather is the way it's been over the past few weeks, you know, sub-zero Arctic chills of -7 degrees.
Yeah, see, it's all you need is an internet connection. A bit of warm, you know, warm weather, that's all you need, really. Cool. All right, so what are we chatting about? What are companies looking at?
Okay, three stocks for you, two new ones and one just to catch up on. But first of all, I want to look at a company called Active Energy Group. The epic code is AEG.
I know of it. I've had lots of people trying to get me into the stock on Twitter and social media. And I said, listen, I like it. I interviewed the guys a while back, and I like it. I said, trouble is, you know, at the time, I mean, the ideal price for me, I like to buy in low and early. It's be early, I think you always got to be, try and be early. It's about 2.26, and it almost doubled. And then people, it was at 4p, people saying, you know, you need to buy this, it's going to 10p. And I thought, listen, it's had a big move there, I'll let it settle down a little bit. It seems to be settling down a bit now, you know. So anyway, tell us about the story.
Well, it is. It's consolidating nicely at current levels. I mean, the shares, the market cap of the company is currently just under 37 million, trading at 4p. It's been as high as 4.5p on the year and as low as just under 2p. Active Energy have several products. They have a wood chip processing and supply business, but the jewel in the crown, and I think this is the one that's got everyone switched on, as it were, is their coal switch biomass fuel business.
What is that, Al? Explain. What is that?
Okay. Well, coal switch, it's the world's only direct drop-in biomass product that can immediately replace coal in existing coal-fired power stations. So what they do, they take the forest waste and waste from cellulose production, and they combine those into these pellets, which can then be used alongside coal in existing coal-fired power stations. Now, when you're running a coal-fired power station, pellets that replace coal and similar products require a refit at the power station, which is a huge outlay by any standards. And there was a very good example recently with Drax, who had to have an 800 million retrofit so they could use eco-friendly fuel and hit their environmental targets. But the great thing about coal switch is that you can use existing coal, you can use any amount of coal switch biomass fuel pellets alongside it. So literally, if a coal-fired power station company is having trouble hitting some environmental targets, it can immediately order. It can immediately order these pellets and start using those alongside its coal. A, it hits its environmental targets. B, there's no retrofit required, so it can start using it straight away. This product is going to have a massive impact, both on the ecology of the globe, as it were, but also it's going to it avoids these huge retrofits that power stations obviously have to cope with, and we're only just now really seeing this product come onto people's radars or come onto investor radars, but the institutions are very keen. It's got a great board. It's run by CEO Richard Spinks, who has many years of experience. He's worked in Central and Eastern Europe since 1980, and Active Energy have a forestry and natural products division, which basically aims to own the entire timber production process. So they own the land, they plant the trees, they grow the trees, they process the trees, and the trees either go into the wood chip business or they go into producing these pellets to fire the boilers. So it's a really practical answer for existing infrastructure to take this on board, hit their ecological targets, and ultimately replace coal.
Yeah, I like it because it solves two problems here. And one is this, it can replace like dirty fuels, dirty energy, which everyone's frowning upon. Coal now, coal-fired power stations are out of favour around the world. And so it can replace that. And also, I mean, the reason why a lot of these, power stations don't change is because the cost. If the cost isn't there, then it's a no-brainer, isn't it? Let's be honest.
It's a no-brainer. That's it. That's the thing. You know, this stuff can be bought in at a similar level two coal. So there's no difference. The AEG have the infrastructure already. Like I say, they own these huge tracts of land, to quote Monty Python, across the Ukraine, across Canada, the US, and Europe. So they've got into ownership of the entire process, which is huge. And as they develop, they will be buying further tracts of land. To enhance and to grow that the forestry and natural products side of the business. But this is a really exciting product, and as I say, it's an absolute no-brainer for coal-fired power stations because they don't have to make any changes. There's no investment required. Instead of buying coal, they just buy coal switch directly from AEG.
So let me understand this right. So that the coal switch, that fuel there, the coal switch thing, I mean, is that different to the pellets, the wood pellets, or what's it? I don't understand. Is it different? There's two different sides of the business here, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right. So you've got a wood chip processing and supply business, which is which will be used to produce MDF and other products.
Right.
So that's the wood chip processing and supply. But coal switch takes the it's taken from forest waste products. It's compacted and cellulose waste products compacted and pellets are created. And these pellets can then once they're processed, they can then be supplied directly. So if a power station is going to order several tons of coal, it can now order several tons of coal switch, and it can feed the coal and the coal switch pellets into the furnace at the same time without having any adverse effect, without having any impact on the way it operates, any impact on the efficiency. But in doing so, it hits its environmental targets because the byproducts, the waste products are far less, and no expensive retrofit is required at the coal-fired power station.
Yeah, I have to look into it, I think. I've not done some research, but I know lots of people have been saying do some research, but I like even smaller caps than this, but there seems to be a huge potential here. But there must be some kind of reason. I have to look into why, which is more profitable at the moment. I'm assuming advanced biomass solution, that part of it, the coal switch part of it, has the potential to be massive, but the other part
absolutely
of it
massive,
is obviously there
.
For some reason. I don't know how much they earn from that. I would like to know the profit margins on that and the other side, but I don't see what is there. Anyway, that's AEG ticker.
AEG, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's move on to something else. What else you got there?
Okay, I just want to move on to i3 Energy. And, of course, we've discussed i3 Energy at numerous points over the past few months. Mm-hmm. Just a very quick reminder, i3 Energy has an oil field in the North Sea. The company was formed in 2014. It acquired the Liberator field license, which is operated by Blake and OGA. And Blake, the operators, also run and operate a field that is adjacent to Liberator. So effectively, they're tapping into a resource that is adjacent to that. The company raised some money last year, came to market, and has been in the process of raising funds and credit facilities from oil investors to commence production on the field during 2018, and they're on track to do that. There's a pre-tax valuation on the field currently of $328 million. I3 is currently worth about 10 or 15 million, very little. It's worth 15 million currently. The shares are traded as high as 70p, as low as 22p on the year, and it's currently just trading around the 59-60p mark. So the company said that the credit structure and the loan agreement from investors was expected to be finalized in early 2018, and indeed moves have taken place towards that. So we're at a very exciting juncture right now, and I think we can reasonably expect to hear news from i3 Energy in the next few weeks in regard to developing the field, bringing the field closer to production and on from there. But there's a very good management team in place. Neil Carson is ex Ithaca Energy, ex BP Amoco, so a very experienced team in place, and it's a very exciting company to be in right now. So if any investors are currently holding this and they bought in and they've seen the stock price drift back to about 60p in the past few weeks, it's one to watch. You might want to top up at this point.
Well, listen, we don't give investment advice, Al. We don't do that.
We don't give investment advice. I will say, I'm a holder of i3.
Well, me too. I do hold i3 Energy. Now, listen, I set up a sort of spreadsheet. And I asked people on Twitter. I said, look for companies with big assets I want that have got a market cap below 10 million. This came in, i3, and I immediately saw the potential there, and I bought straight away. It was 10 million market cap. It's now 15 million market cap, like you say. But it's still a bit volatile. I think people sort of caught on then. I did sort of push out a bit of information on them then, saying, look at this, they're looking at 10,000 barrels a day, looking to, I mean, obviously they're pre-farmed bit of that out, but nevertheless, for a sub 10 million market cap, that's phenomenal. And all they need to do is raise the funding, which looks like they're in discussions for that. Now, there is opportunity here, like you just said there, because there's a convertible loan note still in the off in here, and they recently converted $500,000 of it, of 2 million. So still 101.5 million left to convert. Now, that has the downward pressure on the share price a little bit. So, like I said, and I see sometimes when I'm standing outside and I'm looking at a company that has potential and there's a convertible loan note there, there is potential to get, a good price here, because it does, exert downward pressure because they're selling here normally. Not necessarily, because the person converting could be a long-term holder, but it can have the potential to do this. That's why you'll see a bit of volatility in this stock. And also, it's quite tightly held. So, sells, there's quite a, if someone sells a half-sized, decent-sized chunk, that's quite a big percentage of the free float, because there's not a lot of free float about. So there's a lot of volatility here. So, I'm involved. I'm biased, obviously, though, because I'm involved and you're involved. But I would definitely say do some research on i3 Energy, because it's worth doing some, I think. You know.
Also worth adding that the company said that the company also announced that it intended to broaden its portfolio by bidding for 100% of the acreage that's adjacent to the Liberator Field too. So plans to expand that field. And the great thing is these fields, the adjacent fields, are already in production. So it's so the infrastructure's there, the mechanisms are there. It's a known producing region. So this isn't something that's prospective, and if we drill, we might find something. They know it's there already. It's just the infrastructure is being put in place to extract that oil and get it to market.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. Anything else, Al?
Yes, another company that was brought to my attention by David Paul of Vectorvest last week, and this is also in oil. It's a company called Urals Energy. UEN is the epicode. Urals Energy, as the name implies, it's an independent company. Its assets are located in Russia, both in this Sakhalin Island and the Kolgayev Island, and it's. It operates a number of wells and is drilling in a number of new locations in these areas. Published an update on its reserves and progress at the end of December, and in particular on the South Dagi license on Sakhalin Island. It's Ural said it spotted its first exploration well at South Dagi, and any oil production from that well will be taken by road tanker to its refinery at Petrosac, which is 400 kilometers, which would basically just feed directly into the utilization of its own refinery. So the company, Urals, also said that no additional investment would be needed to process the oils that would be produced from that. So this is an exciting development, and the chairman, Andrew Schrager, said that it was an extremely important landmark move for the company, because obviously it utilizes their existing production facility at Petrosac, which is currently the only refinery on the Sakhalin Island. On the Vectorvest front, Vectorvest identified the potential earnings growth from the activities back in August 2017. The shares were sort of trading then at a fairly lowly 60p. There are several metrics that come into play. The earnings growth rate is projected to be 36%, which is excellent by any standards. Relative safety metric is not so good, but the relative value metric on Vectorvest scores 1.5 on a scale of 0 to 2. And Vectorvest currently has a valuation of £1.66, which means obviously today is 90p odd. It's the stock is well undervalued. But the company also put a statement out on the at the end of February, saying that the recent levels of oil production are in line with management expectations, and the company drilling the drilling progress at Sakhalin at the South Dagi field continues in line with management expectations, took into account potentially difficult weather conditions and so on. So in short, the company is progressing in line with production and getting the oil to the Petrosac refinery at Sakhalin. So this is exciting. There is significant upside on offer, and clearly it's a region that offers a huge amount of potential, given that the oil price is gradually firming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know what? It had a big push up today recently. Went from 60 pence to like 130. Came back down to sort of 82 pence, went back up to 135, and then it's all the way back down at 98 pence. So you can see a double bottom there and double top. So the double bottom looks like it's supported at 87 pence. So I'd be surprised if it goes below that. Because
that's the thing. It's come back. We're very closer to support now. There's an article, actually. It's published on the Vector. If you just go to vectorvest.co.uk/blog, you'll see the article there on the website. And you can read about the valuation and the detail behind it. But there's good potential upside. But as you say, with that with that double bottom in place, where we are now at 90p, it's unlikely the shares are going to drop too much further. So I would say a good entry point.
Yeah, absolutely.
But do your own research.
Always, yeah. Anything on this, I mentioned this podcast because every now and again I get some flack saying, oh, you should stay what you own and all this stuff. And but I try to, you know, and I do say anything you hear in the podcast is just information. Otherwise, what are we going to do? Just stop talking, stop doing the podcast, not give any information, because I know by far the majority of people are happy the podcast is here and that we give information out, and people then will do research on that if they find something interesting. But of course, there's thousands of investment ideas out there on the stock market. It's up to you, and we have to bring some to you now and again. Otherwise, there wouldn't be anything here. And I'm sure you prefer some information rather than no information. So there we are. We're not promoting these and say buy them. We're saying here's the information. Do your own research. You know.
So exactly. We can't please everyone, but we all have our own ways of researching stocks and finding information. And if we can, between us, pull this information together, then we're going to be better informed than we were at the start. So it stands to reason.
Exactly. Yeah. Lovely. Al, thanks for that, and we'll speak next week.
Thanks, Jess. Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And here they are at five, Asia Met Resources, ARS. At four, Petromatad, MATD. At three, Feedback, FDBK. At two, Avesoro Resources, ASO. And at number one, it's Velocis, VLS. Okay, it's time for the top five most liked RNSs. They are as followed. At five, Flying Brands, Stonechecker signs agreement with Korean ISG. At four, United Oil and Gas, regulatory consent update, Bradford Bridge. At three, Mayen Energy, update on heavy oil sands project, Utah. At two, Sirius Minerals, full year results, 2017. And at one, most liked RNS came from Horizonte Minerals, HZM Holdings Inc. Company. And this is Canaccord Genuity, I think, upping its holding to about 10%, if I recall correctly. Please do your research on that. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.